First, I want to thank our sponsor, the Natural Resources Defense Council, the nation's leading environmental action organization. The NRDC uses law, science, and the support of more than 1.2 million members and online activists to protect our planet's wildlife and wild places and to ensure a safe, healthy environment for all living things. And with that, we're going to turn to someone from the NRDC. That is David Doniger. He is in Montreal. He's the NRDC's policy director of the Climate Center, also focuses a lot on how to protect our ozone layer. So, David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
How's it going?
Well, when you hear this, the conference will be wrapped up. I don't know how it's going to end up as we talk today on Wednesday. There's two possible outcomes. The world community is working hard to come up with a way of starting negotiations on the next steps to be taken to deal with global warming, to reduce the pollution causing it. And the United States is standing in the way. The United States government is opposing any new negotiations. This is going to play out by the end of the week, and we'll know whether the rest of the world has buckled under or whether they go ahead and leave the Bush administration behind.
Now, that was certainly the position of the United States a week ago when we checked in last from Montreal. Has there been no movement whatsoever in the last week?
Yeah, their stance seems to be, what part of no do you not understand?
And what part of international pressure and it's only the survival of future of life on this planet do they not understand?
Well, the things are changing all over the United States. And California's got new emission standards to cut the global warming pollution from vehicles, and 10 other states have adopted the same standards. You've got states in the Northeast putting limits on the carbon dioxide from power plants. You have corporate initiatives. You have city initiatives. Everything's changing in the United States. Even the U.S. Senate voted last June, a majority of the Senate, that we need mandatory limits on the pollution that causes global warming. And yet the Bush administration stubbornly holds out that you can solve this problem with mere voluntarism from America's polluting corporations.
And, of course, the thing that is changing that is what brings us to this conversation is our climate. And just to give you a few tidbits in case you're wondering what we're talking about, in case you've been living under a rock, broad scientific consensus agrees that carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, of course, a byproduct of our cars, power plants, and other fossil fuel-burning industries, has contributed significantly to the past century's global rise. How much? Well, about 1 degree Fahrenheit. That may not sound like much, but when you start messing with Mother Nature and pulling on one string of our ecosystem, has all kinds of devastating effects. We hope we don't have to find out the full force of that, but that's where we're headed, it seems. And just last month, NASA climatologists projected from thousands of temperature readings that 2005, this year, would end as the warmest year globally since records were first kept in the mid-19th century. With all this evidence coming out almost daily, David, what do you think the consequences are going to be for the White House, the administration being there and just keeping its head in the sand?
Well, the administration's position is just very difficult for rational people to understand. We have a climate crisis. We have impacts such as you have just summarized. The Arctic ice cap is melting. Hurricanes are becoming stronger. And everything that's been seen already is just the beginning. It's expected to get worse unless we curb these emissions. Everyone in the world, every country in the world, seems to get this. The only friends the United States has in this negotiation are Saudi Arabia, which, of course, wants to keep the spigot on oil use as high as possible.
And Exxon, I'm sure, is in there.
Well, and American energy companies are really the explanation. Mm. The American oil companies, coal companies, electric power companies, and auto companies. That's the core constituency that this administration is representing. Even within each of those industries, there are voices for change. But the administration's lined up behind Exxon and General Motors and companies in each of these other sectors that just don't want to change. They stuck their heads in the sand, and that's where they want the U.S. government to be.
And this denial is especially outrageous because, of course, we are the biggest contributor to greenhouse gases, about 21% when this was last measured in 2000. I'm sure it's up from there.
Well, we're about a quarter of the world's global warming pollution altogether. and we're 5% of the people in the world. The you might call it Category 5 denial in Washington, but things are changing.
Not funny, though.
At the city level and the state level, even in Washington. And I think the clock is ticking, and the U.S. policy has got to change. If it won't change before the end of this administration, it will certainly change after. And that's what we're telling other countries here in Montreal. Plan your moves. Plan your policies and your negotiations, not on where the Bush administration is now, but where U.S. policy is going, because we're coming back into reality.
The Canadian environmental minister was quoted as saying there is an urgent need to send a signal to the world about the future, talking specifically to the U.S. What role has he played in applying pressure?
He and his government have been playing a strong role. They've been trying to find the formula that that gets us to an agreement here in Montreal to start these negotiations. He has taken the position exactly opposite President Bush's. We need to act on this. We've got to get going. And as the host of the meeting, it falls on the Canadians to find the formula to make the negotiations work. And they've been working hard. Well, you'll know by the time we are heard whether this succeeds or fails. But he deserves good marks for trying.
And what about Tony Blair? What's the feeling about his wavering position there?
I think Tony Blair, in the end, understands that you can't solve the global warming problem with voluntary efforts, with do-gooder efforts. You need limits, real binding limits that change the markets. And that's the position that his government and Europe are carrying into this. Now, they're nervous about how far you can go if you're the rest of the industrial world, with the United States lagging behind. But we tell them the things are changing in the U.S., and you need to plan on where we'll be in a couple of years when the next negotiations wrap up and people really make the commitments of what they're going to do next.
Okay, David, we just have a couple minutes left. What's sort of the best-case scenario and worst-case scenario as this conference wraps up at the end of the week?
Well, you will either have an agreement that charters these negotiations and sets them on a path of a couple of years of negotiation of the next phase of real limits to cut the pollution that causes global warming, an international deal on that. Or the United States and perhaps its Saudi allies will succeed in putting a monkey wrench in the whole process. But they can't stop it forever. We have to solve this problem and people in the United States realize that, too. So when they're gone, we'll make progress, if not before.
And then, of course, there's a wide body of belief that, and you're probably in that group, that feels, you know, Kyoto isn't enough. So all this controversy about ratifying Kyoto and is the U.S. going to be part of it or not, when that was just meant as a mere beginning.
Well, it is a mere beginning, but it's also a beginning of opportunities for the businesses that make the solutions, the clean cars, the clean electric power sources, the energy-efficient appliances, and so on. There's huge markets to open up for clean energy technologies, both here and in developing countries. And we can either, our businesses can either be part of that, or they can find themselves on the sidelines, and all the new business go to Europe and Japan. You know, look what's happening to the auto industry. 30,000 GM workers are going to be laid off because the management made the wrong bets about what cars to design and try to sell people. Well, people don't want the SUVs. They want the hybrids. And GM made the wrong bet. Our industry can't afford to do that again. It's too painful for our whole economy and for the American worker.
Well, and you mentioned economy. That's, you know, the reason Bush gives as a reason to this will wreck the economy if we are part of Kyoto. And look what one hurricane season has done to our economy.
Yeah, I think it's not a matter of the whole economy. It would be good for the economy to tackle this problem.
Absolutely.
It's a matter of the profits of the narrow constituency of energy companies that the Bush administration really represents.
Thank you.